Well, while we were advancing towards Rotterdam, Amsterdam, one day when we were just entering a village and the Germans just pulling out, some fellow across the square started waving at me to come over. And of course I was a little suspicious that it might be, you know, some sort of a ruse to get at us. So I brought a machine gun up and had him cover the guy, and then I went over. They took me into a building that looked like it was a pub, I guess maybe it was, or a hotel. They, in a big room, there was a table sitting on an area rug, and they moved the table and they moved the rug, and there was a trap door, and they opened the trap door, and out came four people that looked like they were made of parchment. You could swear you could see through them, they were so pale. And these were four Jews that they had looked after and kept on that hole for 4 years. I guess they got out occasionally in the dark to get a little exercise, but they were never out in the daylight till I saw them, I don't think. Their eyes were sort of blinky like, well, obviously they weren't used to the brightness at all. But they seemed to regard me as their liberator, so they gave me a pair of rabbit skin gloves that I guess they had made down in the hole. And I kept these for many, many years. Finally, I sent them to the War Museum in Ottawa, and I got a very nice letter back thanking me for them. I think they indicated they would be used in some sort of an exhibit showing how the Jewish people existed, you know, and how they were helped by the Dutch during the war. It was an interesting little experience. I've often wondered how these people made out, but I suppose I'll never know. We went on to Rotterdam, I think the day after the end of the war. And I was billeted or assigned the Rotterdam Zoo as a place to set up. And I lived across the road in some very modernistic looking apartment blocks with a Dutch family that really were quite interesting. The man must have weighed about 200 pounds when he was properly fed. He was weighed about half that when I saw him. His wife was somewhat better off. She wasn't quite as thin, and the kids looked reasonably well fed, but you could see that where the little food they got went. And they cooked all their meals in a can, like a jam can, with wood that they'd, I guess, stolen from the boulevards of Rotterdam. I guess all the trees were cut down over a period of time, and they have a little bitty fire in this can to cook anything that was available, which wasn't much. But when we got to Rotterdam, I was instructed to get all the 30 hundredweights and go to the docks and load up ship's biscuit from a Liberty ship, the first ship that had been gotten into the port of Rotterdam. And this was to be distributed to 7 or 8 distribution points throughout the city. Well, as you drove around the city on that first day, there were all sorts of dead people hanging out the second and third story windows in the streets that you drove down. They literally starved to death waiting for relief. And of course, Rotterdam was surrounded by water with bridges in, so the Germans had little trouble to see that no food got in, or that any food got in they got, or whatever, I don't know. But we got down to the docks, and this was a great area. The Rotterdam port is and was an enormous thing, surrounded by a high chain link fence, gates through it. And when we got to the ship, we found that very few boxes had been gotten off, because the stevedores were in such poor shape that they really couldn't work. So our big husky Saskatchewan boys got at it, and in a very short time they had loaded up all the trucks, loaded them almost to the sky. They were just teetering up there, they were so full with these boxes of ship's biscuit. And we were just about to move off when along came a Dutch army captain who said he represented the Dutch government in exile, which had been flown in and set up in a casino in Rotterdam, and they were meeting at that time. He said the government has decided that the stuff can't be delivered because it'll get in the black market. So I said, you know, that's ridiculous. Once there's anything edible in this town, this stuff won't be even fed to the rats. Well, he said, you know, we argued, there's more to it than that, but I did quite a lot of shouting, and finally he said, well, come and see if you can make your point to the government. So off we went. When we got there, some fellow who looked like an admiral came out and said who he was, and I made my point all over again, and I think I must have convinced him. We went back inside, came out again, and said, would you come in repeat what you said to the cabinet, I think he said. So in I went, and I made a relatively impassioned speech about what I thought, and that I thought this stuff should be distributed. That I told them about the dying people, and I don't suppose they'd been around enough to see this, but there were dead people, and I bet you dying people too. Anyway, off I go, and I just get in the gate, and I say, okay guys, crank up, let's go. When back comes the Dutch captain on his bike again, and he said, stop, they've changed their mind. So I just unbuttoned my webbing of my revolver. I didn't pull it out, I'm pretty sure I didn't pull it out. I said, you just stand there and watch those trucks go by. And then, after they're all gone, and you can't see them anymore, you go back and you tell them you were too late. And that's what he did, as far as I know, and I spent the next 2 or 3 days thinking I was about to be arrested, but I never was, and I never heard another word about it at all. And I've been back to Holland twice, and I've tried to go to Rotterdam twice, and for silly reasons I've never gotten there. But it's funny, all the celebrations of the Canadian involvement in the liberation of Holland, none of them have ever, to my knowledge, taken place in Rotterdam at all. They've been in Amsterdam, they've been in other parts of the country, but our little bit of history just seems to have been forgotten. I guess that about ends the war as far as I'm concerned.
Is there anything else you'd like to add or anything that we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. I you know, the funny thing about things, the difficult parts of the war and so on, is your capacity to put them out of your mind, and they stay out of your mind. At least they seem to stay out of my mind. Another interesting thing about recollections after 45 or 50 years is they get out of focus a bit. I've run across quite a lot of old Saskalais around here since I've been out, and you know, when we start talking about the same event, the differences are quite marked. They're not, you know, they're not so marked that they're ridiculous, but various people seem to have remembered various parts of things more clearly than others. There's a poor guy who had his arm off yesterday from cancer, who was with us, and he was reminding me, and I'd forgotten all about it, that in Scotland, just before we went to Sicily, he developed some sort of nerve infection. I forget what you call it. Is it it's highly contagious and highly dangerous and kills people very frequently. Anyway, he got it, and it paralyzed this arm that came off yesterday. And he was reminding me that he got out of hospital by just insisting that he wasn't going to stay in hospital, and that I had come and picked him up and hidden him until we sailed. I'd forgotten all about that. Probably I should have left him there. He might be in better shape today.